Welcome to Shortcut to Sunday. I'm Ben.
I'm Bruce.
And this is your podcast for January 28th, 2024, which is, hold, tabbing, the fourth Sunday after the Epiphany in year B?
Sorry,
our usual website is down, and so all the material that I'm used to being able to pinpoint at a very specific spot of a website, not there. So I'm floundering. I don't know if you could tell.
And no bizarre art either.
Yeah, that's right. But you know what? We are still coming to you not live on behalf of Holy Family Episcopal Church in Fishers, Indiana. Bruce, other than having to do a different website, how are you today?
I'm fine.
Very good. Very good. I will take fine. We are, as we are recording this, we are still in the midst of some fantastic decorations for our Gospel at Hogwarts, which was this past weekend. So very much enjoyed that, as we do every year.
Always a blast.
Ton of fun. So if you missed it, if you and kiddos missed it, I'm sure it'll resurface again. So be on the lookout next time. To be able to sign up for that and to attend. It's always a blast.
Yeah.
My goal is always to scare at least one child.
I think you did.
And I think I did. So it was a good time. It was a good time. We've got a lot of stuff to kind of push and promote here for the church. The first and foremost is this coming Sunday is our annual meeting.
Yeah.
So, in addition to the annual meeting, we're also having a thank you hoopla for Betty Bogeman, our treasurer of 25 years, who is going to be very happy retiring that role, I think. We are thanking her and Nancy for giving of all that time for so long. Mm-hmm. But our annual meeting is the 10 o'clock hour. So we won't have – or sorry, 9 o'clock hour is what I meant to say. So it is – we won't have our usual educational hour because we're meeting as a parish. Learning about it's our state of the union kind of a thing, so lots to be presented. If you're not able to make it in person, but you are interested, the goal and I always want to stress that this is the goal. It may not always be the outcome because
it's technology.
Yeah, it's technology. But the goal will be to broadcast it on our YouTube channel. It won't be live broadcasted though. So like as far as I shouldn't say it that way. It won't be found available on our channel directly though. It will it'll be an unpublished link, mostly just because it's not part of the programming that we want to put out there for newcomers. It's more internal discussions.
What's
and things
the old
like.
Term, inside baseball?
Yeah, it's a very inside baseball recording. So that will be broadcast live, and will a link will be generated for it. So if you're interested in attending online. I'm just going to go ahead and throw our admin under the bus and say email at admin@hfec.org. If I'm not mistaken, link will be randomly generated when we go to start. So I think the realistic way that it'll play out is that we'll have people's email addresses and I will try to go live easily 10, 15 minutes in advance so that we have what YouTube has identified as the link, and then we can email that to the group so that people have it. But also then it'll be it will be stored, so if you're not if you want to come back to it later, we can email that to you, that link to you
anytime.
So that'll be the goal. So that's the annual meeting coming up, so the that'll be during the 9 o'clock hour this coming week. Then we're into February. So we'll have game night here at the church on February 2nd at 7 o'clock. So that's all things board and card games. So feel free to join us for that. The following Sunday, the 4th, will be our music and meditation. Yep. Did I say it right? Did I get the right name? Oh, so that's a no.
I still like my title for it, which is Prayer at 33 and a Third.
Yes,
but
yes.
Music and Meditation is more self-explanatory.
Yeah. So your RPM reference is lost on this young generation. No one knows what
However,
that is.
Every piece of music we listen to is via record.
Mm-hmm.
That's part of the charm.
It is. So that'll be... That's also a 7 o'clock, right?
Yeah.
7 o'clock here at the church in the sanctuary.
Mm-hmm.
We have the bishop is coming for her Sunday service on what would that be, the 18th?
Yep, 18th.
So that's February 18th. So while that's still a few weeks away, can't hype that up enough.
Right.
So that's
be here before we know it.
Right. And so we have some confirmands that are getting ready for that. Nothing cooler than being confirmed by the bishop in in your home parish.
Yeah,
so.
I think we're at 5 right now.
Oh, cool.
Maybe 6.
Cool.
Yeah.
So I would say that at this point, if you're hearing this though, and you want to do like a reconfirmation, is that a thing?
Reaffirmation.
Yeah, that's what I said.
Hey, you have to read.
Yeah. To do again. Is it too late for an individual?
No. Not too late. In fact, it's not even too late if you want to do it for the first time.
Okay.
You'll have to do some catch-up reading. But
yeah,
we have a couple of really good books we're using, and you have missed out on some insightful discussion, but you can still catch up.
Very cool. I would imagine they would reach out to you. Still could do that via the admin email, but that would field those kind of questions to Bruce directly. Mm-hmm. As you are running that bit.
I'm running that bit.
So anything else? Anything? Did I miss anything?
Gosh, yes.
Okay.
When is this going to be released, this podcast?
Tuesday the 23rd.
So Tuesday night, the 23rd,
uh-huh.
There's movie night at the Imagine Theater at the Hamilton Town.
It used to be the – I even forget the name it used to be.
Okay.
So, but yes, up there in Noblesville.
Information
is available on the website.
Yes,
on
Way
our
of
website.
Love. Featuring our presiding bishop,
mm-hmm.
Documentary, one night only, shows 4 o'clock and 7 o'clock. Many of our parishioners have bought tickets to go to the 7 o'clock show.
Okay, yeah.
But it'll be a good time.
Yeah.
Not too often you get to hear part of a sermon while munching on treats.
I mean,
depending on what you buy at the snack.
Hey, look, if that's a hit, then maybe we should reevaluate what we do on Sunday mornings. I mean, maybe this is, maybe we should.
We have everything with people coming in with McDonald's trays now.
That
wouldn't bother me if you came.
If
that's what it took.
We're not going to sign up. We're not going to sign up for a franchise or anything.
No.
But.
Gosh. The Crystal Cathedral.
Southern
California. Which.
Crystal with a K?
Which went out of business and was sold to the Roman Catholics.
Uh-huh.
But well before that, they had a food court.
Oh, okay.
So they didn't have to worry about coffee hour. You had to go to the food court.
I immediately jumped to a conclusion. I thought you were calling us the Crystal Cathedral and like having us like sell a franchise to the Crystal little miniature slider hangover food chain. Not my favorite. I can't hide how I feel about that. But we are, long story short, the point of that was
we're
very welcoming. The floor in the sanctuary is easily cleanable.
Concrete.
Yeah. So feel free to
come. The
only thing
we're missing are floor drains.
Yeah.
But still, easy
messes are asked to be cleaned up. It's not a stadium.
Right.
we don't have staff to come in and sweep up the popcorn. But,
or a dog.
or a dog. We have a goat. does great work. Well, let's go.
If only it wouldn't unionize.
the goat union?
Yeah. I guess you didn't get that email.
No, I guess not. I thought about making some sort of goat joke, but let's move on.
Yes.
This day in church history, so the January 28th in church history, our first entry comes from 1814. Sorry, not 1814, 814, oh, even further better. back. This is the day that Charlemagne died, the first emperor of the Holy Roman Empire.
What year?
814.
Oh, okay.
One of the greatest rulers of all time. He was influential in church matters. He died in Aachen, Germany.
Uh-huh.
Which is kind of funny. Aachen. Aachen's where he died.
He was so sore.
But as the old joke,
gave it up.
As the old, I think it's a Wayne's World joke goes, the Holy Roman, no, it's an SNL joke. The Holy Roman Empire was neither holy nor Roman nor an empire. Okay, go ahead and discuss.
I would be happy if Saturday Night Live quoted that, but it really was by a very famous scholar.
It is an SNL quote.
Oh, good. Yeah,
I have seen this quote. Yes.
Yeah. I'm trying to remember.
I don't remember. People are probably already saying it out loud and listening to the podcast. It was, the skit Coffee Talk, or as Mike Myers would say it, it's Coffee Talk. Right. So yeah, it was a joke on Coffee Talk.
Okay, I'll have to find it.
You'll have
that.
To find it. You'll have to find
yeah.
it.
Yeah.
1077, Pope Gregory the VII. And then I guess his other name was Hildebrand, because it says it in parentheticals, but I'm not familiar with that. Absolves Henry IV at Canossa, Italy, after forcing him to stand 3 days barefoot in snow.
Wow.
Yeah, right?
Okay, why? Okay.
That's all I got, buddy. I don't know, but the authority of the date for the date comes from a book called, and this is funny, Short History of the Catholic Church.
That's what they chose to highlight.
So it sure was short.
Yeah. Or next century.
Or is the Pope short? Anyway. 1547, Edward the VI becomes King of England and promotes the Reformation.
And what's the Reformation?
Promotes the Reformation.
I think he followed Bloody. No, he didn't.
No. 1561, persecution of French Huguenots is suspended by the Edict of Orleans during the reign of Francis II. So a ceasefire. Yes.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. A ceasefire called on 1561.
Which didn't last, as I recall.
It also didn't actually happen, but it was called for.
Yeah. Okay.
It wasn't exactly word travels slow, they say.
I didn't hear anything. Did you? No. Fire!
1568. The repose, and then it does us the service of telling dumb people what that means, death of Venerable Theodosius, an Orthodox ascetic who had founded the Tatma Ephraimov Wilderness Monastery in Volgoda, which has got to be Russian. Has to be Russian. The Theodosius passes away.
What's the source of that? I'm just curious.
OCA.org. Okay. And right. I'm not going to go to it just for fear that it's some sort of Russian.
It's KGB.
Take my money.
I'm guessing it's Orthodox Church of America, but.
We'll never know because I'm not going.
and even that could be co-opted.
I know we're in the this day in church history, but you're just talking about co-opting websites. Just Friday, we were going to order pizza from Jets.
Yeah,
and there was Google promoted a fake Jets pizza website.
Oh no.
Pizza with one Z. And it looked just like
it.
Oh. Yeah.
That was a bullet dodged.
Yeah. So, yeah, be careful what websites you go to. Says I, as I like, I don't know. What
this is a screwy cult. What's
Bruce's clicking on this? This laptop stopped working. That's weird.
Why is that smoke?
1834, Sarah L. H. Smith reaches Beirut, where she will devote her life and energy as a missionary to Syrian women.
Good for her.
Yeah. 1896, death of Joseph Barnaby in London, a noted choir leader and composer. He wrote many hymn tunes. Let me see if there's any one. O Come All Ye Faithful is one that you would know.
That's a good one.
Uh-huh. And Stand Up for Jesus.
That's an okay one.
A little Baptist-y for us, isn't it? he had also led the first English performance of Dvorak's Stabat Mater, which I'm trying to remember what that translates as. What is that Greek?
Standing horse?
No. It's a Marian hymn.
Yeah.
Yeah. Stabat Mater Dolorosa, which means the sorrowful mother.
Sorrow.
Standing. Yeah, because Dolorosa is sadness.
Okay.
Dolorosa. So, yeah, the standing mother.
Oh, standing at the foot of the cross.
Yes. Oh, yeah. Hey, there's a picture of that. Yep.
So you got it.
Yep. I could have shared that.
I want credit that... That was from my brain inside.
There you go. And now we're going to play the just shy of 3 hour YouTube video of Stabat Mater.
Half of which is someone coughing in front of the iPhone that was recording it.
No, this actually, because it gives you a little bit of a YouTube, it gives you a little bit of a preview. This looks like a full-fledged performance. But Dvorak did some...
Yeah,
pretty cool stuff. So, yeah. feel free to listen to that maybe in the background while you're working next time. Just for those who want to be able to find it, STABAT MATER, Stabat Mater,
and coffee talk. I got my two YouTube references
spelled exactly day. Spelled phonetically. By the way, coffee talk. 1906, conversion of Oswald J. Smith at a Robert A. Torrey evangelistic meeting. Smith becomes a notable evangelist as well as a hymn writer. Story of my life in the People's Church. I'm not sure which evangelical branch that comes from. 1907, 1 year later, we see the death of John Patton, a missionary to the New Hebrides. I'm not sure I know where that is. His wife and son died shortly after he began work. Alone and brokenhearted, he dug a grave and buried them. A man of great faith, he survived numerous threats from the islanders. Where is the New Hebrides, though? Right off the Scottish archipelago.
What year?
Back to the website. 1907.
Huh.
Wait, that doesn't make sense. No. I don't know why that entry says maybe it was founded. It was a colonial finding of Scotland, but it's mostly east, but northeast of Australia. So it's in Indonesia.
Oh, okay.
It's down there in the South Pacific. It was a naval base as well during the war. So not that war, though. Not the 1907 war, the other one. The one later. And then finally, 1998, we see at a Sotheby's auction, Michelangelo's drawing of Jesus asking the Samaritan woman for a drink sells for $7.4 million.
Nice.
I mean, is it?
I don't know. It's like, well, that's another world.
Yeah.
Maybe so, I can click on the
art entry world there for you.
Maybe I can click on the image and download it onto my phone. Yeah.
It's
and then it's mine.
There you go. Should have made it an NFT. That's your fault, Michelangelo. Fool. Well, let's go to our readings for this week. Our first reading. Don't do that. Yawning is contagious. I chastised the priest. He looks chastened. Our first reading comes from the book of
yawn.
Stifle it. Deuteronomy, chapter 18, verses 15 through 20. He's going to get red face. He's going to pass out. Deuteronomy 18, 15 through 20. The Lord your God will raise up for you a prophet like me among your own people. You shall heed such a prophet. This is what you requested of the Lord your God at Horeb on the day of the assembly, when you said, if I hear the voice of the Lord my God any more or ever again see this great fire, I will die. Then the Lord replied to me, they are right in what they have said. I will raise up for them a prophet like you from among their own people. I will put my words in the mouth of the prophet who shall speak to them everything I command. Anyone who does not heed the words that the prophet shall speak in my name, I myself will hold accountable. But any prophet who speaks in the name of other gods, or who presumes to speak in my name a word that I have not commanded the prophet to speak, that prophet shall die. Okay.
And then you get onto the calendar of church history.
There you go. Maybe not. Probably not. Deuteronomy. We don't read from Deuteronomy very much at all.
I'm trying to figure out why we are today.
So, well, let's give at least a little bit of background context. Deuteronomy. What's the general vibe of Deuteronomy?
It's a very, well, the context that is presented is that it's Moses giving a farewell speech just before he dies, and the people who had been wandering for 40 years in the desert then get to enter the Holy Land.
Okay.
So what that farewell speech consists of is primarily how are you supposed to live once you cross the River Jordan into the Holy Land.
Okay, so the person speaking about raising up a prophet like me is Moses. Okay, cool.
And we don't think Moses did it.
We don't think this is written by Moses?
No.
Yeah.
It's one of these things that it's a collection of sayings and instructions that...
Gotcha. A writing down of oral tradition.
Yeah.
Kind of story in storytelling.
Okay. I mean, because most of it is written as an address.
Okay.
It's not like, oh, and then Moses did this, Moses did that.
Gotcha.
And it really is Moses said this, Moses said some more.
Okay. Who's the prophet that gets risen up among the ranks? Do we know?
I don't think, well, it depends who you're rooting for. some say, there's some that have said it's Jeremiah or Isaiah, but that was hundreds of years later.
It almost feels as though, like, I'm not going to make the journey with you, be able to make the journey with you, but once you get there, then a prophet will arise. It doesn't really feel like sometime in the future, perhaps eons from now.
Well, the big thing is Moses is trying to say you don't get to choose who the prophet is. Only God gets to.
Gotcha.
And it's supposed to draw out what we remember from the book of Exodus, mm-hmm. of Moses being called by God directly. Mm-hmm. And people actually being surprised that it was this Moses dude who had been on the run from the law. And similarly, when God needs a prophet, God will call a prophet. Whereas in other religions at the time, prophet was like a member of the king's staff. The king always needed a handful of prophets to do divination.
Yeah.
And so Moses here saying, no, you don't get to do what the Canaanites do.
Mm. Okay.
It's like, dude, goody.
Yeah, I would imagine, like, I'm just having, like, as I'm sitting here thinking about putting myself in the shoes of those at this time, or maybe not this exact time, but, yeah, like, shortly thereafter, or even in Moses' shoes, the how do you prepare the way for a new prophet? Because as you're pointing out, these are some of the concerns. Like, there's mm-hmm. false prophets or prophets who are maybe even good intentioned, but not handpicked, not actually, speaking the words of God. Like, how do you, protect your future selves against this issue? Because, like, yeah. Proving that a prophet is actually a prophet is pretty hard.
if you can't prove it, not a prophet. I mean, Moses is trying to communicate this. It's a real high standard, mm-hmm. and you won't always have a prophet.
Gotcha.
And that's breaking the mindset. And so that's why he's hitting it real hard.
Hmm.
I have to admit, I still don't understand. I've been reading Deuteronomy and then our gospel reading. I'm still not sure why these are paired.
Well, maybe this is the reason. Well, I don't know what the gospel reading is yet, because I do this on the fly. Yeah. But maybe it's because of this last line. I think out of perhaps the point of this last line, which is like, hey, if this is the case, that prophet's going to die.
If they're fake.
If they're fake.
Yeah.
On first reading, the implication, your mind kind of goes like, oh, God's going to be like, zap, done. But really what it's kind of saying is, maybe what it's saying is like, if they pass away, they weren't really picked by God, which means that the prophet being referred to here is either Elijah or Jesus. But I guess Jesus actually does die. Yeah. I mean, that's kind of part of the thing.
Yeah, that's part of the whole
thing. He doesn't stay dead, but yeah. That also makes me wonder then maybe if the Hebrew here is a little bit less specific on it being like die. Maybe the word is a little more nebulous, maybe, or maybe we really are just talking about Elijah.
I don't think so.
I'm just spitballing here. I'm just
that's what we do.
That's what we do.
Except
I don't know. I'm not a spiritual leader.
I have to say, I have footnotes that I get to consult.
That's my out. I'm not in charge of this train.
Yeah, it's. We like to, even Episcopalians would love it if the Bible could be interpreted easily and in a black and white sort of way.
Mm-hmm.
And I think this Deuteronomy passage is that slap in the face of saying, no.
That would be nice. It doesn't work that way.
Right. Because it on the one hand says, yeah, the way you can tell if the person's a true prophet is if it comes true. Oh, but sometimes a false prophet will get it right.
Right. Yeah. Even a blind squirrel finds an acorn every now and again. Yeah. So, yeah. Sure. I know the phrase.
Yeah. So, yeah, it does not back off from the stance of be cynical about someone who says they're a prophet.
Mm.
That it's not that straightforward. Deuteronomy was written close to the time of Isaiah, first Isaiah.
Mm-hmm.
So there'd already been hundreds of years when Deuteronomy was written down,
right,
of prophets being active in Israel, in the history of Israel, and the ones that are in the Bible, for the most part, are heroic.
Mm.
So I think part of it is the authors of Deuteronomy saying, yeah, these, Samuel, man, what a prophet. But you can't always count on having a Samuel around. No matter how much you want it, no matter how much you pay some guy to say they're like a Samuel, it's all up to God.
Yeah, okay. I think also one of the other things to it doesn't really help you. I don't know if it really helps interpret anything here, but just something that kind of in a way makes some instructional differences. This is the end of Deuteronomy is the end of the Torah.
Yeah.
So in a way, it is kind of like the. These are some of the last phrases of the Torah, which are instructional of like, this is all we got. Like this is the this is the end of like, this is the end of your instruction before you have to go out and
live it out,
Yeah. So in a way, some nebulousness there makes some sense because, as I think anybody who's lived a life on this earth, whether currently or in the past, it's not predictable and it's not easy. And that's kind of what this instruction is. Like, hey, I mean, let's face it. Even in this passage reading between the lines is saying, you're not going to know.
Yeah. As much as you want to.
Yeah. And like, number one, it's saying most likely it's not you. But also, like, there's enough conflicting information, or I should maybe not conflicting, but like,
conflicting is fine.
Setting against it, its own self of like, this isn't clear. This isn't like, oh, and you shall have a sign. You know, their forehead will glow. That's how you know.
I was going to say, you know, the boy with a lightning scar.
Right. It's just not, this isn't a prophecy so much as a, hey,
it's almost the opposite.
Exactly. It's the anti-prophecy. Yeah. I like it because it really is like, you're going to want to try to figure this out. And the long and short of it is you can't. So again, kind of reading in between the lines, this is more kind of encouraging you to be skeptical, but also skeptical in an invested way. Like,
yeah,
you should care about what these people are saying.
Yeah.
And you should care as to whether or not it's coming from God. So, but you're not going to really know. So maybe you should question what you're being told.
Yeah.
Compare it to, what you're, you know, what you have been instructed as to like how God interacts, and what God would want. And you're going to have to kind of divine this yourself. And if you're doing this actively, you're an active participant in that relationship with God, as opposed to, you know, hey, I'm here. Tell me what to do so that I don't have to think.
Yeah. And to completely back up what you just said, I'm not sure which verse it is. It's near the beginning of this reading. That the reason God is saying this is because the people had said, if I hear the voice of the Lord, my God, anymore, or ever again see this great fire, I will die.
Yeah. Yeah. Which is kind of like hearkening back to the Exodus chapters where they're like, yeah. Oh my goodness, this is terrible.
Exactly.
And so this is God saying like, you know how you griped the whole time? I'm not going to talk to you anymore. I'm not going to do it. You're going to have to listen to each other and you're going to have to behave. Which kind of does then like narratively open up the reason why they're, you know, Jesus ends up coming and like, all right, well, see how that worked out. Maybe you need a little bit more instruction and listening to each other. That didn't really work, did it? Give you a little bump in the right direction.
How was it in Babylonia?
Right. Which then does kind of, begs the question, like, are we due for the new Testament to occur? Are we due for another corrective action?
Well, that's one of the great fights within Christianity, mm-hmm. since literally since the Reformation.
Yeah.
Where in the Counter Reformation, the Roman Catholic was saying, no, wait, you guys are really wrong. And in these ways. And the Protestants said, oh, no. You guys are really wrong.
Yeah.
And in these ways. And what's great about being an Episcopalian is we went to the sidelines at that point and said, you guys are just too mean. we're not going to play anymore.
It's not right or wrong. Yeah. It's supposed to be I think generally speaking, to take the 30,000 foot view level, most of Christianity doesn't really believe that we're not going to receive any further direction or correction.
No.
It's going to be, oh, then the world ends, which is kind of interesting. Like, or you might have another corrective action of like, hey, it's been 2,000 years. Y'all are still messing up. Who knows?
Yeah.
Who knows? Well, we like to think that we do, but we don't.
Yeah, and that's why we as Episcopalians are not part of the grouping of Christians who say Revelation closed with the book of Revelation. And that anything that is discerned has to be backed up by the Bible.
Yeah.
You know, we instead say, yeah, God's continued to inspire humanity through the arts, through direct visions, mm-hmm. through theology, through thinking, all sorts of ways.
Yeah.
And the Roman Catholics take it even a step further of saying, they don't phrase it this way, but that their church hierarchy is now in charge of the ongoing revelation and has been for centuries.
Got it.
And so, yeah, the Bible's good, but it doesn't say everything.
Right.
And so that's why the Church of England and the Episcopal Church take a compromise stance of, I'm trying to remember how it's worded, nothing can be taught that is in contrast to the Bible, but not everything that should be taught is found in the Bible.
Interesting.
So it takes interpretation immediately because we're comfortable saying, yeah, you can eat shellfish.
Yeah.
Which the Bible says you can't.
Right.
So right away we're like, oh, wait, don't take us literally on what we say we're not supposed to take literally.
Yeah. But not always.
Yeah.
But braided hair is right out.
And no eating of geckos.
You're right. Exactly.
Who
knows?
That is why it's so complicated.
Yeah. So who knows? I mean, we might not be due for, Jesus 2.0, but we might get this pillar of fire back.
Yeah.
You never know.
Well,
how about now? Do you miss the pillar?
And there are various religious figures, even in recent times, that say they got the pillar of fire.
Yeah.
Where have you been?
Yeah.
Join me.
I've had a bonfire before. I've seen it. I've been there.
Of course, empty your savings and down, give it to me.
Yeah, if I drink enough, it'll talk to me.
Yeah.
Well, let's move on. Let's move on to our psalm. Our psalm for this week is the entirety of Psalm 111. So let's praise the psalm.
Ten verses.
Hallelujah. I will give thanks to the Lord with my whole heart in the assembly of the upright in the congregation. Great are the deeds of the Lord. They are studied by all who delight in them. His work is full of majesty and splendor, and his righteousness endures forever. He makes his marvelous works to be remembered. The Lord is gracious and full of compassion. He gives food to those who fear him. He is ever mindful of his covenant. He has shown his people the power of his works in giving them the lands of the nations. The works of his hands are faithfulness and justice. All his commandments are sure. They stand fast forever and ever, because they are done in truth and equity. He sent redemption to his people. He commanded his covenant forever. Holy and awesome is his name. The fear of the Lord is the beginning of wisdom. Those who act accordingly have a good understanding. His praise endures forever. All right. Psalm 111. What do we know?
Some.
That's more than others.
Yeah.
Yeah.
111, 112. We think we're a purposeful pair.
Oh, okay. Yeah.
I was trying not to say prayer.
Did they pick a pair of purposeful prayers?
Yes.
Or maybe, what's a peck? Is a peck an amount? Pick
yeah,
a peck
it's an
of,
amount.
Okay. Pick the pair, the peck of paired prayers. Anyway, yes, they're paired. 11 and, 111 and 112.
Yes. And
purposely.
What?
Go ahead.
And 111 is describing the holiness of God.
Mm-hmm.
And 112 is describes how people should respond to that.
Oh, okay.
With
so,
a certain amount of transition with 111 towards it.
Interesting. So not a call and response, but in a way kind of it like is. That vibe, yeah. that yeah. feeling. Cool.
Yeah. So like to use a contemporary example, chant Psalm 111, since these were hymns.
Mm-hmm.
Read the gospel, then chant 112, and you'd have a beautiful set of teachings in those chants.
Oh. Hmm.
And so they very well may have done that in the temple in worship.
Okay, so why don't we do that?
I don't know. Well, there's no reason.
It could be fun.
To. Yeah. Yeah.
Would the bishop kill us if we had two psalm readings?
No.
Okay,
well,
cool.
Especially if they're since they'd be used as a gradual hymn.
Mm, mm-hmm.
We can sing as many hymns as we want, and so we can chant as many psalms as we want, or say them, recite them.
Could be cool. I'm just yeah. saying. Could be cool.
Something to think of.
Something to think about.
Might write a note on my hand.
What is in the assembly of the upright in the congregation? Is that just the temple? Is that okay?
But the really good seats.
Oh, okay. Whoa. Oh my. All right.
Well, because the temple was like a mall.
Oh, okay.
So there were lots of rooms with lots of different activities going on.
Mm.
And while I'm not positive of it, the assembly of the upright, I believe, was a part of the worship space where respected religious wise people got to sit and worship.
Gotcha. Okay.
Just okay. like there was the court of the Gentiles. Where
okay.
that's as far as they could go into the temple. They could still worship, but because they weren't Jewish, they couldn't sit wherever they wanted.
Mm, okay. Okay. Mm, so a class system. Interesting.
Oh, yeah.
Mm,
very, very hierarchical.
Let's see here. Yeah, I would, boy, I really kind of wish that we had 112 then to
yeah.
to read in conjunction with this, because that would be kind of nice.
Yeah, the Bible I'm looking at, they describe, their one line describe, just description of Psalm 111 is, hymn to God's great deeds,
mm-hmm.
of 112, blessing on those who treasure God's acts and give to the poor.
Hmm.
So that the way that you live out the greatness of God is acts of mercy, giving to the poor.
Yeah. Okay. Cool. Anything else about this psalm? I feel bad because we don't have its pair.
Oh. But you can
They're
read
paired
it on
psalms.
Your own.
Why was one adopted and the other left? It's just so sad.
I believe Moses said.
And a psalm without its pair shall surely die.
I was thinking more.
So not this Moses quote that we just had.
Thou shalt not separate the psalm that is in pairs.
Yes, exactly.
Or has been paired.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. They're paired for life. They mate for life. And we took it away.
those whom God has joined together, let no one put asunder.
Yeah, exactly.
Even if they're psalms.
Even if they're psalms. So how dare we?
Okay, so.
Back on the rails. Go ahead.
Back on verse 10.
Uh-huh.
The fear of the Lord is the beginning of wisdom. It's one of those well-plaqued verses.
Mm-hmm.
And we talked about it before, but this is one of the primary places where instead of fear, the much, much, much better translation is reverence.
Okay. Yeah. What? You don't like a little fear in your religion? What's the matter with you?
It's
wise to be terrified of this of your maker. I mean, just you better.
Raiders of the Lost Ark.
Right, exactly. The fear of the Lord. It is interesting. Never mind. That's a whole rabbit hole of just you better, or you're just gonna get spanked. You know what I mean? Like just disciplined by God.
Or not.
Yeah, right? Reverence. That's so much better.
Yeah, and part of it, the reverence of the Lord is the beginning of wisdom. All those who practice it have a good understanding, and it really should be translated as them.
Mm.
So it's a bizarre, not bizarre, it's an unexpected pronoun for reverence, for piety, and even certainly for fear.
Yeah.
But that's one of the reasons why reverence makes more sense than fear, but also just what the Hebrew word is.
And I think we've couched it in, or we've considered things in these terms before, but like just you, the closest thing that we actually have to compare this relationship, I know the Bible does a lot of bridegroom language, but I think hindsight being 2020, the better relationship is really, parent and child.
Which is what Jesus really enjoyed talking about.
Exactly. And most, not all, but most parents would, if asked, would you rather be feared or respected or revered, and as the word would go. I think if they thought about it for more than 5 seconds, they're like, oh, I guess I'd rather be, I'd rather my child look at me and do something because I have said, hey, you should do this. And they sit there and go,
that's wise.
Yeah. Or, hey, this person usually knows what they're talking about.
Yeah.
So, okay. As opposed to, because if you don't, why? You know what I mean? Like, because some of us have kids who just don't have fear. And we know that's a finite road you can go down. And some kids will, you could go down that road for their entire lifetime and they'll always be fearful. But at some point in time, most kids run out of room. So that's really not the basis that you want to have your parental relationship built on.
And to go back to what we were talking about a few minutes ago, one of the crises within evangelical Christianity right now is that their theology is based on fear.
Mm-hmm.
And it has been for centuries. Fear of hell, fear of damnation. And a lot of Americans are like, no.
Yeah.
You're talking about a God of love. Why is fear even part of the equation?
Exactly.
So I'm just backing up what you just said.
Yeah. Yeah. And it's because of translative choices like this.
Yeah. Back in the time of King Henry II,
mm-hmm.
this translation was, let's keep the pilgrims happy.
Yeah.
And no, very few of us want to live like the pilgrims did, or the Puritans. Maybe that's an easier term to use, but it's the same group. This was throwing
I think you can also talk
about fear here. It's only a psalm.
I think you can also quickly imagine some translations were also done at the behest of a king or
yeah.
government body, which shared its power through the church. So
fear was helpful.
Fear is very helpful. Yeah. You know, yeah. So it's pretty easy to imagine why that translative choice was made. I just don't understand why we maintain it.
It's still that pressure for cultural Christianity to win out rather than faithful scholarship.
Boo. Boo, I say. And I have no fear of repercussions.
Let there be a boo.
And a mighty boo rose up. Anything else?
No, that was the one I wanted to get into.
Good. That's a good one. All right. Our gospel reading comes from the Gospel of Mark, chapter 1, verse 21 through 28. So very early on in the Gospel of Mark. They went to Capernaum and went. And when the Sabbath came, he entered the synagogue and taught. They were astounded at his teaching, for he taught them as one having authority and not as the scribes. Just then there was in their synagogue a man with an unclean spirit, and he cried out, "What have you to do with us, Jesus of Nazareth? Have you come to destroy us? I know who you are, the Holy One of God." But Jesus rebuked him, saying, "Be silent and come out of him." And the unclean spirit, convulsing him and crying with a loud voice, came out of him. They were all amazed, and they kept on asking one another, "What is this? A new teaching with authority? He commands even the unclean spirits, and they obey him." At once, his fame began to spread throughout the surrounding region of Galilee. Just to clarify, because we do have in Matthew, I think it's Matthew, the early story of Jesus as a child in the temple, and his parents being negligent and forgetting about him.
In Luke.
Is it Luke? Is it Matthew and Luke?
No.
Just Luke. Just Luke. Okay. This is adult Jesus, not child Jesus.
Because this is the Gospel of Mark, so there is nothing about...
Mark just starts out...
Jesus was...
Here's this 23-year-old dude.
Older,
but whatever. Yeah.
And he met up with John the Baptist and it all fired up.
I got you. Okay. So this is not one and the same. This is not a younger Jesus story as a result. So what is, I don't know, what is one teaching with authority? Is that just like the difference between a good preacher who can deliver a one of those powerful sermons and one who feels a little bit more wishy-washy and just doesn't command the same attention? Or what is it? Like, what are we talking about here?
Well, the authority is preaching truly with, communicating God's wisdom, desires, instruction. So it's like, this isn't just Bible quotes.
Gotcha.
This is something that is lighting up our brains and our hearts and our awareness of the needs of the world.
Is it also possible that even though it's not captured in the book of Mark, that he's using language and words that imply, literally that authority, as opposed to like maybe a scribe saying, "No, we're reading from the book of Deuteronomy, just like we had. Moses says this stuff, and here's maybe some of the things that we should be considerate of." And then Jesus, in turn, though, and saying like, "God, my Father says you do this."
Sort of.
Like, do we think maybe there was a little bit more of like a, "Hey, who is this kid telling us what to do? Who's this young man telling us what to do?"
That one, yeah. It mentions the scribes.
Uh-huh.
In the Gospel of Mark, the scribes are often the contrast with Jesus.
Mm-hmm.
The scribes were folks that were educated in scripture and tradition.
So these are the Pharisees of other gospels.
Sort of, yeah.
Yeah, okay.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And And scribes were in Mark are essentially religious and political bureaucrats.
Okay.
And so, you know, their teaching would be, well, the procedure in this case is, you know, fill out form 65-8, mm-hmm. put it into box C, but put the carbon in box D, and then maybe God will listen to you. Whereas Jesus is talking as someone who really does believe God is real and active in the world.
Interesting. Okay. All right. And we do have one of these. Do we have multiple casting out of demon stories in Mark? Is this the one where shortly after this one he sends unclean spirits into the pigs and they jump off a cliff, which is a fun story.
I think it is a fun story. I think it's a little further down the road.
Is it? But it's also Mark.
I'm almost sure it's Mark.
Okay. Which, if I'm not mistaken, doesn't. I think there are other stories of casting out demons, but I don't know as if comparable, one-to-one comparable stories exist outside of Mark. I think perhaps this one may also be another, like one in another gospel, but like the facts are so unspecific here in Mark because it's fast paced that you're not entirely sure if it's the same casting out story. The pigs, if I'm not mistaken, are only Mark.
I don't remember.
Shame. Bruce, that's why you're here.
You have a computer in front of you.
I don't know anything. Like, it's not actually our reading. So I don't have to really craft a question to Google and then sift through the answers.
Okay.
No, you don't have to. You don't have to. The reason I was bringing it up was it seems as though this is a. I'm getting the vibe that this was a bigger deal for Mark than maybe for the other gospels, because each gospel writer. Oh, okay, cool.
You got it.
Because each gospel writer does have a tendency to kind of, in a way, show their hand as to like, I found this aspect to be.
It was also in Matthew.
Oh, is it? Okay.
One of the.
Okay.
One of the Google things was wrong.
Okay. Okay.
So Mark and Matthew, but again. Closely connected.
Yeah. So I kind of feel like this is a one of those things that was a bigger deal to Mark because he has these casting out stories, more than one of them. But maybe I'm wrong.
Well, Mark is, oh gosh, it's also in Luke.
Okay. All right, never mind.
The synoptic gospels.
I mean, look, you see a bunch of pigs jump off a cliff. It's going to make it in the paper. I mean, just doesn't matter if it's the Gazette or the Journal.
There are details among them.
Yeah, that's going to hit.
I mean, it is very, a very vivid thing to picture.
Yeah.
I'm sure it was even more so to see it in person. I'm sure we'll have that reading down the road, so I won't go into it.
There you go.
But Mark is very concerned with showing that Jesus does have authority over evil.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
And that's something that no other human in authority is exercising mm-hmm. in the time of Jesus, that the authority figures are all sellouts to the Romans. And then the Romans themselves are very evil.
Yeah.
So to have Jesus be able to walk in and suddenly command a demon.
Yeah.
It's like, oh, this is something different.
Yeah. And I do think it's worth mentioning that this kind of portion of the story is one that I think does kind of split the faithful as far as like.
Well, there aren't any yet.
Well, no. I mean, us.
Oh,
us, nowadays, us modern.
Nowadays. Yes.
In that, like, I don't know, some of us like are like. Yeah, demons and demon possession, totally a thing. And then other people are kind of like, oh, that seems a little weird. You know, I'm not entirely sure I buy into that. So this is kind of one of those stories. Because definitely there's a group of Christianity that is really fascinated with it. Like, the there's an ongoing war between angels and demons, and we're the playground, and like creating this almost mythos around it.
Oh yeah, I mean, yeah, it's like a action movie.
Yeah, yeah. So I guess all of that to say, I don't know, where do you stand on this, Bruce?
well, that's a good question. Possession, that's a fair question.
Possession and exorcism and all that fun stuff.
Okay. Technically, the Episcopal Church does believe in the power of exorcisms.
Mm-hmm.
We are...
There's instruction in it, isn't there? Isn't there, it's written somewhere?
Literally kept in the bishop's office.
Okay.
It's not something...
Yeah, it's not in the Book of Common Prayer. No. I've looked. It's not...
Where is it?
Because sometimes you feel as though your sibling is.
Yeah. Just... but yes, technically a bishop is supposed to have exorcist on call within their diocese.
Uh-huh.
And they never call them. I mean, obviously that's an exaggeration, but they're seldom called. Mm-hmm. Many bishops never authorize an exorcism in their entire multi-decade careers as bishops.
Mm-hmm.
So we think the need for an exorcism is extremely rare. And that's because Jesus is more powerful than any demon that you can imagine, including mm-hmm. a satanic level. I mean, like head demon level. And that most of the time what has been historically identified as a demon possession has been a psychological or physical illness.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Or a female. Because part of it was that was the enforcement against females was, she's smart. She's a witch.
Yeah.
That's
yeah.
the only explanation.
The only explanation is that she's a succubus.
Yeah.
Clearly, science. Science betrays you, demon spirit.
Yeah, and you know, it's fortunately, and we really do, as Episcopalians, we really do think you can laugh at evil in terms of these, like, movies and stuff.
Mm-hmm.
Fictionalization of evil, but we better take seriously evil as humans are carrying it out on each other, because it's up to us to counter that evil.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
and that's part of what Mark is trying to communicate here, is that we really are called to follow Jesus in terms of helping people who are being victims of evil.
Right. Yeah. Well, and I think certainly. If you are on the side of like, yeah, I don't really buy into demon possession kind of a thing, that seems odd. Keep in mind, when this gospel was written, definitely a thing. Like
well, yeah, especially in pagan religion.
Yes, exactly.
In Judaism, not so much.
Yeah, not so much in Judaism, but like...
Romans all over it.
Right. Yeah, exactly. Culturally, this was around. So
it was seen as a logical explanation for how the world
exactly
worked.
So this psychology wasn't really part of the sciences at this point in time.
Not at all.
So considering that both Matthew, Mark, and Luke have later on healing stories, blindness and death, mm-hmm. and hearing being restored. What could a writer of a gospel describe a physical healing of some sort in this area that they have no real understanding of?
Yeah.
At the time, this is how it would play out.
It was a metaphor that was accepted.
Yeah.
And understood within the society at the time.
Yeah, because nobody, you know, Luke, this physician, didn't, you know, closest could have been like brain broke. I don't know. I don't know. You know what I mean? Like,
yeah.
They have no understanding of, you know, levels of, you know.
Well, and again, they were in competition with the Roman and Greek supposedly wise people of, oh yeah, you know, that person obviously has a demon in them, because mm-hmm. otherwise they would be obeying me.
Yeah.
So let's beat them.
Maybe we could beat the spirit out of them.
Yeah, because if you see...
If you hit hard enough.
Yeah.
So sad that demon would rather him die than leave the body. That's too bad.
And sadly, there are heretical branches of Christianity that that literally do believe that. So they beat their children to beat the demons out of them and kill them.
Interesting.
Yeah.
Interesting.
Tragic. Tragic.
It is tragic. So, but also, if you fall into the camp of, no, I actually do find this fascinating. I mean, it's worth the discussion because it's not our reading this week. But at some point in time, as you pointed out, if it's in three gospel readings, we'll get to the pigs.
Yes. All that bacon.
This story is a lot easier to digest, I think, than the one where Jesus, in a way, seems to unjustly punish these pigs. I mean, you know what I mean? Like, it's kind of like, it's one thing to cast it out. Oh, and it's gone into the ethereal air. It's another to go like, I'm just going to take this and I don't know. Nobody likes these guys.
Well, but again, we'll talk about it more later, I'm sure.
Look at him go.
As God is my witness, I thought pigs could swim. but that's in the pig story, the demon requests it.
Yeah, that's true. That's true.
And thinks that's going to be a safe out. And
that's true.
The pigs drown.
I didn't want to.
Well, and so we can say evil is stupid. And that's why it's so tragic when we don't overcome it.
That's a great point. We could have a whole other podcast on the fact that, you know what? We're all kind of stupid.
Oh, yeah. 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 That's why we're all capable
righteous of evil. Righteous can also be pretty dumb. We're not immune. Just because you're faithful doesn't mean you can't catch the stupid bug every once in a while.
Very true.
Lord knows, I wouldn't call myself righteous, but I would definitely call myself stupid.
Now I know why this is paired with the Moses thing. Yeah, you'll never be able to figure out who a prophet is.
Yeah. Just don't even.
Just don't even try.
Don't even. Well, with that, I think we'll call to a close this year podcast for January 28th, 2024. It is the fourth Sunday after the Epiphany in
where's the year going?
Whatever it is.
B.
We're in year B. B. As we always do, we invite you to join us in worship this coming week. As I said at the top of the recording, if you want to participate in the annual meeting, we won't have an ability. I don't think I said this. At the beginning, we won't have an ability to count online votes, really. I don't
or
think,
in, or no,
but
nor interact.
Right, but if you do want to see the goings on, that'll be that'll be where to see it. If you're not able to join us in person at the 9 o'clock hour, and until next week, I'm Ben.
I'm Bruce,
and we'll talk to you then. Bye-bye.
Bye.